Hello, and welcome to this episode of Bite Back Chats Books, where we chat to BBC home editor Mark Easton. Mark's journalism career began at the Southern Evening Echo in Southampton in 1978, and he has since headlined at many of the major UK broadcasting houses, returning to BBC News as home editor in 2004, where he provides expert analysis and broad perspective on the issues and stories affecting modern Britain, chronicling the impact of rapid demographic, technological, economic, and global change. His new book, Islands, Searching for Truth on the Shoreline, reflects his lyrical but hard-hitting journalistic understanding of modern-day social structures. Travelling to Malta, Iceland, and the west coast of Scotland, amongst others, as research for Islands, Mark presents not only a dreamy travel narrative, but also a labyrinth of historical facts and mythical tales, oozing with the essence of escapism. Today we want to know why, how, and all sorts more about his new book, Islands. Hi, Mark. Great to have you on our podcast today.
I'm delighted to be here now.
And we're just thrilled to be talking about your new fantastic book. And I guess, I mean, the first question is really in the title of the book, Islands, Searching for Truth on the Shoreline. Does the idea of searching for truth suggest that we have to pick our way through a landscape of lies?
Well, as a BBC journalist, you know, I'm encouraged to seek the truth. And as you suggest, this might imply that there's a sort of binary situation going on with truth on one side and lies and myth on the other. And I think, you know, that is a real theme of this book, in which I kind of consider that shoreline between truth and myth. And I think I come to the conclusion that, well, it's all a bit more complicated than that. In the book, I quote Aristotle, who argued that poetry is superior to history because its language and rhythm and its melody speak to what he said ought to be true rather than merely what is true. And I suppose my conclusion is that myth and history are not opposites. They're not alternative answers in a true or false quiz. And I say in the book that their relationship, I think, is more like a mother and a child, that fiction and stories and narratives have an important place for human beings in trying to get closer to the truth.
Okay. It's not a new phenomenon, this thought of islands. For example, Shakespeare's used the islands as metaphors, like especially in The Tempest, with the strong theme of nature versus nurture, right through to more recent debates about islands. And why do you think we're still so fascinated by islandness?
Well, I think the point about islands is that they're really helpful, particularly if you're a writer, actually, because often you're trying to sort of understand the world in a way that feels detached from reality. And the thing about islands is that the encircling shoreline sort of magnifies and shrinks aspects of what happens inside the encircling shoreline. And I think for writers, they are they mean that the usual rules don't have to apply, particularly in a fictional sense. You know, how many adventure stories, how many crime murder stories are set on islands, because they allow you to detach your characters from the world around us. And I guess that for me, that was also part of what I wanted to think about, the effect of what happens inside that circle, both in terms of physical islands, what actually happens to the natural world inside an island shoreline. So, I talk about what mythologists, the people who study islands, call the ABC of islandness: amplification by compression. And they point to things like, you know, the little Shetland pony or the Komodo dragon. The islands do have this effect of making some things bigger and some things smaller. And I think that for me, I wanted to understand how not only that works on islands, and that is part of the book, but also how the sort of encircling shoreline of a physical island, or indeed our own bodies, affects everything that happens in that liminal space between the singular and the plural. I suppose you know, it's a complicated book, but I think that that's sort of what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, exactly. When you were writing the book, I think, were you conscious of the society beginning to reconnect following COVID and how those boundaries have changed? And how do you think the pandemic has affected our relationship with the home and this sense of islandness?
Yeah, well, the book, I mean, I started the book before COVID, but the book itself starts with some thoughts on how the pandemic and the lockdown and all of that tested our relationship between ourselves, the individual and the community, as I say, the singular and the plural. Mm. You know, we were advised to see our family, our friends, our neighbours as potential killers. I think it's still too early to know whether the pandemic has permanently changed human society, but I think undoubtedly it has given us pause, a period to reflect on what matters in our lives. And yes, the importance of our homes, of green space, of the time we spend commuting to and from a computer screen or whatever. And it gives us also the opportunity to consider the importance of community, our neighbours. Yep, clapping the health service on a Thursday evening. But also, I think thinking about the delivery drivers bringing in the groceries to the local supermarket, to consider, in a sense, the relative importance of occupation in our society and how that's often mismatched with status. So, yes, I think that the COVID actually did sort of magnify some of the ideas that I was playing with. I was very, very conscious as I was writing quite a lot of the book, you know, during lockdown and before and after, on how we relate to society beyond ourselves. I think it's an important force in the way that ultimately the book came out.
And I'm in early on in the book, you write down, you remember as a young boy writing your address, Mark, Easton, my bedroom, my house, my street, Pearson, Glasgow, Scotland, United Kingdom, Europe, planet Earth, solar system, Milky Way, universe. I mean, I definitely did that. And I think, as you say, it's a good way of rooting yourself. And especially in COVID, when you were in lockdown, we were rooted in this one place and we felt, God, everyone is rooted, but as part of this bigger thing that's going on. And you talk about as well the different rooms around your home and how in the more communal rooms it feels like, and then you have the sense of islandness in your more private rooms. You have a natural that boundaries within the home. And over COVID or since COVID, there's been a general trend in interior design, sort of rescinding the idea of open plan kitchens, eating television area, because people prefer more broken plans, but I want my own time around the house. And do you think this changing relationship within the home is a ripple effect of a broader trend at work on the macro scale in geopolitics, sort of reflecting a changing relationship between us and them?
Well, you're talking about the privacy gradient, as I discovered it was called. And yes, of course, you're right. I think we're using our homes perhaps slightly differently post-COVID. I think, you know, working from home, we need spaces for that. We've also, as I was saying, I think we've understood the... I think you're talking about privacy gradient, the way that we move from the sort of super private to the public sphere. And undoubtedly, in terms of the way we use our homes post-COVID, we've been thinking more about wanting to have a bit more privacy, a place perhaps to work from home as well. And that maybe has sort of changed the way we think about the space within our homes and how we might use it. But on that broader question, the book reflects on us and them, as you say, and particularly on the sort of psychological side of that, thinking about the way that human beings tend to see those who are not resident on their particular island within their sort of identity circle as lesser than them. It's called othering, and it's really, I think, the curse of humanity. You know, it's what leads us to world wars and holocausts. We see it in aggressive nationalism, football fans beating each other up, social unrest of all kinds. And I suspect that I'd love to think that maybe we're entering a new era of the brotherhood of humankind, but I suspect that the psychological forces which make human beings behave as they do are are very slow to change, if at all. And it's probably really the most we can do is try to counter that with stable, secure, and fulfilled societies.
And I mean, what do you think about the young's understanding of islandness? Do you think they have a different relationship to boundaries?
Well, what I would say is I think the young have had a really tough time of it over the last few years. I see it in my own children. Those key years between school and university and then setting out into the adult world, you know, in island terms, leaving the safe harbour of childhood. They've been completely disrupted by the pandemic restrictions. And, you know, I they're not years you can get back. These are key moments in our lives, and they've been very restricted by everything that's happened. So, yes, I do think that their sense of boundaries probably has been altered, at least temporarily, by what's happened to them. I'm not sure. I don't know is the short answer whether or not they, you know, the young have been permanently affected by this. I think, you know, we're now seeing an economic situation, which means that, you know, it's going to become more expensive to go out and they won't have the money to do so. So there seems to be constant pressures on young people in so many ways to sort of just stay at home and sit in their room, one bar fire on just to keep them from getting too cold. So I'd love to think that that COVID has, you know, reminded us of the importance of being able to cross boundaries, and that we will give the young generation every chance to do that on their terms.
And I'm sure the younger generations reading your book will resonate with a lot of what is in it. And what would you say sets Islands apart from similar books?
This book is not easy to pin down. It takes an idea and really runs with it. You know, thinking first about physical islands, as I say, you know, defined literally and semantically by their encircling shoreline. And I think what sets it apart is that, you know, I could have written a book about the impact of that encircling shoreline on island communities around the world, and that would be a perfectly reasonable thing. But I wanted to do something else. I wanted to take it beyond that thought and move into a much more philosophical space. So it is about us as people. You know, the book is being marketed in part around this thought I had around John Donne saying, you know, no man is an island. And my argument is that, yes, we're all islands. He misunderstood the nature of islands. And I think, you know, what I'm trying to do in the book, I do ask the reader to do a bit of work, basically. It's not an easy book, you know. I hope that, you know, using stories and narrative and language and words, I can help people consider some of those, you know, those massive eternal questions about our existence. Yeah, I'm trying to get into that space. So I'm really hoping that by picking on the stories of islands and islanders, coupled with my own reflections on the sort of spiritual power of that boundary between ourselves and the wider world, that I can help people explore some of those really big questions. I mean, it is ambitious. It is really ambitious. But my hope is that people, you know, will open it, work through it. And at the end, they may find, you know, that what I'm trying to do, that searching for truth on the shoreline, which is in the title where we started, helps them explore some of those really big questions about the human heart.
And I suppose through your broadcasting career, you've essentially translated intricate social, cultural, political observations into digestible truths. And I suppose a lot of the imagery is the way that we can connect through the book. But there's a lot of also myths and history in this book. Which did you find especially fascinating on discovery of, like, one of the historical tales in the book?
Oh, there's so many, but I think one of the things that really I really enjoyed exploring was the idea of the Canary Islands, which were right on the edge of Ptolemy's map of of the world, and they were just a series of little buttons on the hem of the world, and that these islands represented an extraordinary junction between life and death. They saw them as the beyond that was eternity. They saw them between truth, the real world, and the sort of mythical world of that was so important to the ancient Greeks, and that these islands took on this incredible importance as a dividing line between Pangaea, the land, and Panthalassa, the sort of encircling ocean. And so I was really, really struck by this. So I'm vaguely aware of some of it, you know, being reminded that the meridian now obviously goes through Greenwich, but for centuries ran through the Canary Islands. That was the line between east and west as well. And it all pinned down to these little islands, which the ancient Greeks called the Fortunate Isles or the Isles of Bliss. I think that was, I felt really excited about discovering about that that division in the way that, you know, our ancestors saw the world and saw themselves and their, you know, going back to what we were just talking about, some of those really big questions about existence.
And I think you do ask and answer a lot of the big questions. And I think this book's got something for everyone, which is why I enjoyed it so much, especially. And I suppose I've got two sort of silly questions, if that's all right. This is probably one ode to a BBC programme, Desert Island Discs. I couldn't help myself but ask. Along with the Bible and Shakespeare, which one book do you think you would take to a desert island, or maybe did you, or in your travels?
So you very kindly warned me about this question, racking my brain slightly about this. And in the context of the book, if I'm allowed, I'd like to take a stamp album filled with stamps from around. Is that allowed?
I'm sure. Why not? I think that's not fascinating.
And perhaps it's surprising because obviously I love words and I love stories, but I kind of, stamps, as you will know, feature quite heavily throughout the book. And I think that they are, fascinating because they are a record of the sort of practical connection between a state and the outside world, but also the design, the way that they're constructed, their shape, their color, the things that they feature are sort of indicative of how people see themselves and their own identities. So I think if I'm allowed, I'll take a stamp album, and I'm sure that within every one of the little pieces of perforated paper, I'll find stories and tales.
Yeah, fascinating answer. And another one is, if you were a kitchen utensil, what kitchen utensil do you think you would be?
Oh, that's such a good question now, and one that I'm often forced to confront myself with. Kitchen utensil. Okay. I think I am a slotted spoon.
Oh.
I think we have to recognize that it's the theme of the book. It is about what the tides bring and what the tides take away, and it's that constant process of renewal. And I suppose the slotted spoon I will pick because yes, you do get some of, you know, you like to imagine that you're actually collecting some of the sort of important stuff, the vegetables or whatever it might be, and some of the less important watery stuff dribbles away. So I'm going to be a slotted spoon.
Fantastic. Well, Mark, thank you so much for talking to me on this episode of Bite Back Chat's Books. And your book, Island: Searching for Truth on the Shoreline, is out now in store and online.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Bite Back podcast. Islands, Searching for Truth on the Shoreline is available to buy now, online and in store. Head to the Bite Back website to use your exclusive 20% off code, ISLANDS20. If you enjoyed this discussion, you might also be interested in our online articles with exclusive pieces from our various authors, such as Will Hayward on Welsh independence and Tom Harper on the failures of the Metropolitan Police. And do get in touch with us on Twitter with your questions or queries at BiteBackPub.